listening to LSU Daily with Matt Moscona, your home for all the latest Tiger news. Part of the Guarantee Podcast Network.
Okay, let's get it. It is LSU Daily. I'm your host, Matt Moscona. Thanks for being here with us. LSU basketball could be zeroing in on its next commitment out of the portal. We'll preview LSU-Kentucky with Jay Johnson as Game 1 is tonight out at Alec Box Stadium. But we'll start with some football and Brian Kelly's comments on one of the most popular and recognizable players in LSU football.
I was doing a radio interview earlier today with Matt McLaren from Jocks FM in Birmingham. Does middays, really good host. And we were talking about LSU spring football, kind of giving him a spring football update. And he asked him about Harold Perkins. And Harold Perkins has reached that level where it's just sort of an inevitability. Whenever you do a radio interview with someone else in another market, you know the things you're going to be asked about. You're going to be asked about quarterback and Jaden Daniels. You're going to be asked about expectations with Brian Kelly in year two. And be prepared to answer a question about Harold Perkins because he just captivated everybody last year with the way he exploded on the scene, the way he performed against Ole Miss. Certainly the Arkansas game was when I think everything he did went super viral because you were just expecting him to make a play and he just kept making plays. So that's just a part and parcel. But one of the things Matt asked me about earlier today was if Harold Perkins, if they were getting sort of creative with Harold Perkins this spring and how they might use him. And it was a good question because it's a reminder that there are still a lot of people who are unaware of this. And I get it. Like, the overwhelming majority of fans watch the team during the season. They watch the games, you know, on Saturdays, and that's it. And they're back next Saturday. You, by the nature of the fact that you're listening to this show, are a more plugged-in fan. I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just the reality. Like, you go deeper than just watching the games. You want to consume more content about your favorite team throughout the year, so you're more likely to know this. But sometimes, even people that listen to the show do so a little more passively, and then you have people outside who might be tuned in to get some tidbits or nuggets on some of their conference competitors. So it's worth continuing to hammer this point about Harold Perkins because I think some people still miss it. And Brian Kelly has been completely transparent with this. That Harold Perkins is not playing the Jack linebacker spot anymore. He is moving inside and is apparently, according to Kelly, adjusting quite nicely and still going to be doing a lot of the crazy stuff we saw him do last year.
I think you're going to see him as active as he's been and maybe just in a different fashion. If you just line him off the edge, everybody's going to game plan for him. I think we put him in a better position at the linebacker position, and then we can move him around on third down. So I think he's going to be as active as any time that we've had Harold. He just has other responsibilities now that he hadn't had before.
I love hearing Brian Kelly say that because it's such a great case in point where he says, look, if we just line Harold up off the edge, teams can game plan for him. And that's what happened and started to happen last year was they lined Harold Perkins up off the edge, and what you started to see teams do to combat it was they would scheme him out of the box. They'd move a running back or tight end. They'd flex him out so they got Perkins away from the line of scrimmage. That's how they combated it. Well, if Harold Perkins is playing inside, he's playing the Mike backer, he ain't traveling nowhere. He's standing right in the middle of your defense. But it's a great reminder of other guys who have done the same thing in their career, where they were so athletic when they showed up on campus, and they just had to be on the field. And so the plan was, hey, just go out and be athletic and rush the passer. And then as they learned more and more and more and got better, they took on more responsibility. Devin White's a great example of that. When Devin White showed up, remember, yes, he played linebacker in high school, but he also played running back. He was just a freakishly athletic guy and wasn't playing a ton of inside backer. As a freshman, I remember his freshman season was Kendall Beckwith's senior season. There's another great example about this I'm going to talk about in a minute. But as a freshman, Devin White didn't start a game. He played in 12 games, made 30 tackles, had 3 tackles for loss, had a sack, had a forced fumble. Devin White was active. He was athletic. You could see the flashes the potential, the brilliance, the ability. But he wasn't ready to stand in the middle of a defense and make all the calls and be a three-down linebacker. Of course, as a sophomore, and Kendall Beckwith went to the league, Devin White in 2017 had 133 tackles, 14 tackles for loss, and 4.5 sacks. Everyone went, oh, right, that's the freak show that is the best linebacker in football. And it happened like that, year to year. And then as a junior, we know he had another amazing season. 123 tackles, 12 for loss, 3 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 6 passes defended, won the Butkus as the best linebacker in football, and was the 5th overall pick of the draft. But as a freshman, he wasn't ready for that role. I mentioned Kendall Beckwith. Do you remember the argument we used to have about Kendall Beckwith and DJ Welter? And it was, you know, Beckwith showed up, and in 2013, I remember his first game as an LSU Tiger was there. They played in Jerry World against TCU. And Beckwith was so freakishly athletic that he came as a linebacker, and he was playing quarterback in high school. It was just crazy. Well, he showed up, and he played in 12 games as a freshman, but only had 11 tackles, you know, had a tackle for loss, had a sack. It was just, he was a third down specified edge rusher. Like, he was very niche. It was like, hey, situational edge rusher is what they did with Beckwith in 2013. And then in 2014, he started 7 times. It got to the point where it was like, man, you got to get the kid on the field. And so ultimately that transition happened where Kendall Beckwith took over that spot. And then as a junior in 2015, he started all 12 games, made 84 tackles, 10 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, forced 2 fumbles. He was awesome. And then they got him to come back for a senior year. And he was on pace for an even better year. And then we know what happened. He tore his ACL against Florida in that ridiculous game that was made up from the hurricane. But, you know, had 91. He had, in 2 fewer games, had more tackles than he had the year before. I mean, Kendall Beckwith was on his path to being a first-team All-American, and he was incredible in 2016. And then the injury happened, and it was disappointing. But the point is, you can see how that has happened before. You bring freakishly athletic guys to campus. You put them on the edge to rush the passer because they don't have to think a bunch. And that, because it's what they were doing in high school. You're just better than everybody. Just run around and make plays. And then as they grow and develop and mature and learn the defense and they move inside and they can make all the calls and be 3 down linebackers, they can stop the run, can run sideline to sideline, can blitz gaps, get tackles for loss, rush the passer, defend in coverage. Like, they become awesome all-around players, and that's what they're going to do with Harold Perkins. So I know we're fascinated with Perkins and infatuated with his pass rushing ability because he was so good last year. 13 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks. Like, for perspective, Kendall Beckwith in his career had 7.5 sacks. Beckwith had 7.5 for his career at LSU in 4 years. Perkins had that in his freshman season. So I get the infatuation. He was so magnificent. You say, why would you move him off of that spot? It's because he's going to be an even better player, an even a more valuable player as a every down linebacker in the middle of that defense. Still doing a lot of the freakishly athletic things, but making your calls and calling out your defense and growing into that role. So, yes, I love what they're doing with Harold Perkins right now. And by the way, the linebacker room as a whole, with Perkins moving inside, Omar Spates from Oregon State coming in as well. They love him. You've added depth. You got West Weeks there as well. You brought in Whit Weeks, who they like better than West actually as well. Has a much higher ceiling. You're going to be good at that inside linebacker spot. And here was Brian Kelly talking about that position where they were so thin, how strong it is now.
Omar is just a great compliment, and Greg Penn. Greg's had a really good spring as well. So the three of those guys have really done a nice job. Weeks has done a really good job. So, you know, we've really gone from, you know, a position where we were concerned to a position where we feel really strong. And that Harold now really getting down the nuances of that linebacker position actually gives us a lot more in the playbook that we can do with him from that position than just lining him up off the edge.
You love to hear it. LSU winding down spring. Week from Saturday is the spring game. By the way, you'll hear the spring game right here on 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge. LSU baseball plays Kentucky tomorrow. 3-game series out at the box. Jay Johnson met with reporters earlier today. He gave a little thumbnail. Number 6, please, if you could. Gave a little thumbnail on the Wildcats who are coming in.
Really good identity. They know who they are, and they play to that well. known Nick for a really long time. He's a really thoughtful guy in terms of how they put together their program, their roster, how they play, the things that they do well. They bunt as good as any team that we've played since I've been here at LSU. They do a good job with the running game.
Bunts.
It's literally no holes barred on that end. So we have some things that we need to do to control that. On the pitching side, very in a similar manner, they do a good job. Each guy does a good job of executing what they do well. Like, if you don't take good at bats, then you give them a way to execute what they're trying to do. So we need to be on it, you know, like we were on it last night.
Kentucky, by the way, is the number one RPI team in the country right now. They're quite good, and their record illustrates that. Their SEC series win so far, they got a lot of attention when they opened up SEC play and swept Mississippi State. And at that point, we were kind of it's hard now because you have a larger sample size to remember what it was like at the time. And when they swept Mississippi State, and the second games in that series were 12-3 and 17-3. They didn't just sweep State. They beat the crap out of Mississippi State. And we came out of that wondering, like, is State the worst team in the league again? And they may very well be. And Chris Lemonis may very well be out of a job. It'll be fascinating to watch that if this continues to trend the way it is. But there was a legit question about, okay, well, how legit, how good is Kentucky? So they sweep Mississippi State. They took 2 out of 3 from Alabama, and then they swept Missouri. And Missouri, I guess at this point, is most notable for their season opening, SEC season opening sweep of Tennessee, even though they've slipped a little bit now. But and then, of course, they played Georgia this last weekend and at Foley Field and lost 2 of 3. They ended up, it was the only series of the weekend that was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series where they played on Easter, but they ended up playing a doubleheader, a 7-inning doubleheader to wrap up that series and lost both games. They lost 3-0 and 6-2. So with Kentucky, it's a bit odd, right? I mean, they've swept Mississippi State and Missouri, who State's not very good. Missouri is, I think it's fair to say jury's out. They took 2 out of 3 from Alabama. Again, not a great Alabama team. And then they lost a series to a bad Georgia team. We're going to find out a lot this weekend. You come to Alec Box Stadium, take on number one LSU. This will, by a mile, be their toughest test of the season for Kentucky. So we'll see. And look, they get Texas A&M at home. They got to go to Vanderbilt. They get South Carolina at home. They got to go to Tennessee. And then they get Florida at home. So suffice to say, it's about to get real for Kentucky with LSU, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Florida. Like, good luck. They have a backloaded schedule. LSU schedule was front-loaded. They played a lot of really tough series at the beginning of conference play. They won all of them, split 2 with South Carolina. And then after this week with Kentucky, it's going to lighten up considerably for LSU. So we're going to find out a lot about, this is very much a prove your legitimacy weekend if you're Kentucky. You're ranked number 9 in the country. You're number 1 in the RPI. This is by far your toughest series so far. You're on the road. How will you do? A couple other things from Jay Johnson. He was asked about the weather. Unfortunately, it looks like we're going to be potentially dodging raindrops again. Here was Jay Johnson on the weather.
Hopefully there's a window to play 3 games. We'll do everything we can to play those games. I got some positive info on game time tomorrow night, so I think that's good. And then we'll see on Friday. Maybe looks like the better day of the weekend. So if we have to play a doubleheader, we'll look at doing that.
You also heard Jay Johnson mention Kentucky's ability to run, to bunt, run, to play small ball. They lead the SEC with 57 stolen bases and 30 sacrifice bunts. They're dead last in the league in home runs with just 22. So you're not really worried about this team, you know, hitting the ball over the fence. You're worried about them getting on, getting over, getting in. And that does raise a question that I think we were talking a little bit about yesterday here. And that's, do you make a change behind the plate? Alex Milazzo defensively is the better option of Brady Neal. And quite honestly, this year offensively, he's been a better player in a smaller sample size. So Milazzo started yesterday, got another base hit, went the other way with it, took a walk. We talked about that. The whole thing Milazzo worked on before last season was letting the ball travel, going up the middle, going the other way. Just pay attention to it. Like, you're going to want, when Milazzo hits, essentially everything he does is he's going the other way with it. Not going to hit for a ton of power, but he's going to put it where they aren't. But Jay was asked about that today. Does the door open for Milazzo to get more of an opportunity now on SEC weekends?
He was going to probably start the second game of the doubleheader at South Carolina. We just didn't play. And I couldn't be happier with both those guys. Again, you know, I look at the game differently than a lot of people. It's like, what do we need to do to win? You know, I think balancing having left-handed and right-handed hitters is really important and make it difficult on the pitching staff. And batting average is one number. I mean, the guy hit game-tying home runs against Arkansas and Tennessee and has over 20 walks and an on-base percentage over 440. That being said, Alex is playing great. They're both playing good. They're both going to play a lot the rest of the year. If it's a question of, you know, maybe is there more time for him, I just have never not thought of him as a starter too. So I guess the answer is yes, but like I said, I mean, I'm very, very happy with both those guys.
It's an interesting way to say it, that he's never thought of him as anything other or not as not a starter, but he started five times. I think maybe last night was his sixth start of the season. So I mean, the way that they structured it, and we talked about this before the season even started, was Brady Neal was going to be the starter. Milazzo was going to be a late inning defensive replacement. And that's what they've done. And they've given Milazzo spot starts in the midweek, or they want to give, you know, Neal a day off. And that's a great way to approach it. But there's also an argument to be made that at this point in the season that Milazzo's outplayed Neal. So do you consider it? And that, you know, that, you know, if you were going to give him the start in the second game of the doubleheader against South Carolina, and he's going to get more looks in conference play, then you are sort of looking at that. And yes, I agree. Listen, there's an argument to be made for playing two and finding a way to play two. Terry has mentioned this a ton over the years, but that 2000 national championship team, you had Brad Cressy, who won the Johnny Bench Award as the best catcher in college baseball. But you also had Ryan Jorgensen on the team who played Major League Baseball. Jorgensen was a brick wall behind the plate. I mean, he was as dominant a defensive catcher as we've seen here. That includes Micah Gibbs and Papirski. I mean, you've seen some great ones. Jorgensen was as good as any of them. So you had to find a way to get them both playing time, and they did. And they're kind of doing the same thing now with Milazzo and Brady Neal. So I kind of like what he said there. You view them both as starters. You're going to get them both opportunities, and it's going to be situational through every prism they look. But Milazzo's earned, I think, more playing time as well with the way he's played with the opportunity he's gotten. Matt McMahon was likely going to look toward Louisiana prospects who left, played elsewhere, about bringing them back home. Very similar to what we saw happen with Brian Kelly year one, where he went and recruited a lot of guys with Louisiana ties back to the state. And so far, you've seen that manifest. Jordan Wright from Vanderbilt is going to come play his final season at LSU. Had him on the show last week. Jalen Cook was on the show earlier this week, if you missed that. Jalen, of course, started his career at LSU. Last two seasons, he's been all conference at Tulane, now coming back to LSU. And another player that we were keeping an eye on was Carlos Stewart, who has now officially jumped into the transfer portal. Carlos Stewart's a kid from Baton Rouge, played at Dunham, and went out to Santa Clara. And he has been a dude. He averaged 15 this year at Santa Clara, and he's now in the transfer portal, and he's got a list a mile long of schools interested in him. This is a 247 HS Hoops, 247 High School Hoops Twitter account that said Carlos Stewart's told him all the schools that have reached out, and it is a long list. I mean, it's LSU, Bama, Georgia, Mississippi State, A&M, Clemson, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Colorado State, DePaul, Texas Tech, BYU, Gonzaga, Stanford, Boise State, SMU, Ohio State, Creighton. He averaged 15 points, couple of rebounds, couple of assists, 40% from three. He is a scorer, and I'll tell you this, played at Dunham, and I remember talking a while back about Carlos Stewart with Jonathan Pixley, who coached him at Dunham. And I'll make it a little more I'll make it a little radio friendly, but I mean, Pix told me, look, Carlos Stewart's the kind of guy that would like dunk on his mom to win a game. And again, I cleaned that up a ton. Not to say Pix was saying it dirty, but you know what I mean. Like, he is a winner, like driven by winning. And that's the kind of guy you want on your team. Look at the long list of offers he had. I expect Carlos Stewart is going to be an LSU Tiger. I do. I think he will be an LSU Tiger, the same as I told you with Jordan Wright and Jalen Cook. And I think Carlos Stewart is the one that was, of the three, probably the biggest fish. And maybe it was a little uncertain if he was going to jump into the transfer portal or if he was going to stay out west at Santa Clara, but He's in the portal now. LSU was aware that this was possibly going to happen. And remember when Jordan Wright came on the show last week, he said he went in the portal the next day Matt McMahon was in Nashville. The day after Jordan Wright formally put his name in the portal, Matt McMahon flew to Nashville to go see him. You better believe Matt McMahon is all over Carlos Stewart. And I do think he is going to end up an LSU Tiger. So we'll keep you posted on that.
Okay, I'll do it for us here on a Thursday edition of LSU Daily. If you're new and haven't done so yet, please subscribe up on your favorite podcast app. Rate us, leave a review on iTunes. Let a friend know if they love the Tigers. We got you here every single weekday for about 30 minutes or less on LSU Daily.